This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, April 26th, 2005. The great influenza pandemic of 1918 to 1919 during World War I killed 40 million people worldwide. What if a country could create a biological agent that could yield the same catastrophic loss of life on the enemy? That is the question posed by Michael J. Anskoff, United States Air Force Surgeon General Chair at the Air War University. He continues, "This is the potential effect of applying genetic engineering for biological warfare or bioterrorism. Genetic engineering, using laboratory techniques to isolate, manipulate, transfer, recombine genes, that is DNA segments, between different organisms or within a specific organism. The new Dr. Strangelove's Biological Armageddon. Today on Taking Aim, Creating the Next Pandemic." Ralph?
Maya, Colonel Anskoff is a significant figure. He was the 92nd Aeromedical Squadron Commander at Fairchild Air Force Base, the Chief of Aerospace Medicine, the Chief of Operations of the branch of the Hyperbaric Medicine Division, the Director of the Office of Air Mobility Command. Colonel Anskoff was in charge of Squadron Officers School. He is the General Charles A. Horner Award winner for his publication, The Next Generation of Bioweapons, The Technology of Genetic Engineering Applied to Biowarfare. This is a Dr. Strangelove par excellence. In the Stanley Kubrick film, portrayed Dr. Strangelove in a clear caricature but faithful replica of Henry Kissinger of today as a deranged and Nazi-like figure who was at the center of policymaking for the United States government. The Kubrick film was seminal in illuminating for generations the real nature of state policy. The biological Armageddon is best expressed by the work of Anskoff, who in his document, The Next Generation of Bioweapons, Genetic Engineering and Biowarfare, lays out a program for the next biological Armageddon.
He says that organisms with altered characteristics, that is genetically engineered, are, quote, the next generation biological weapons. In this extensive chapter, The Next Generation Bioweapons, about genetic engineering, he lists six paths that will enhance bio threats. These are paths that were discussed by the United States Department of Defense in 1997 in a report called Proliferation, Threat and Response, which identified what it called trends in biological warfare capabilities. And most importantly, they discussed the genetically engineered, what they call vectors, that is the sources, and the growing understanding of both infectious disease mechanisms and the immune system. Now, the annex to Proliferation, Threat, and Response said, quote, "The current level of sophistication of biowarfare is comparatively low, but there is an enormous potential based on advances in modern molecular biology, fermentation, and drug delivery technology for making sophisticated weapons." Now, this was a report of 1997. As we have documented in the last five parts of Creating the Next Pandemic, since 1997, there have been remarkable advances with genetic engineering and also the development of recombinant DNA, the RNA, such that they have put together smallpox virus. They've put together the avian flu virus, similar to the 1918 pandemic virus, and manipulating it so that it was much stronger, and many other new sophisticated viruses for which there are no cures, such as Marburg and Ebola, all man-made viruses. And also, they have developed complete weaponized aerosol mechanisms for disseminating and distributing significant viruses for which there are no cures. The most recent report of the Quadrennial Defense Review, that is at the time when he is writing this piece, September 2001, also recognized, quote, "The biotechnology revolution holds the potential for increasing threats of biological warfare. The time is now. The new Dr. Strangelove's are creating biological Armageddon." Ralph.
Maya, the document here describes in some detail what it purports to be a program in the Soviet Union, and it refers to the work of a top Soviet microbiologist, which is then described in terms that are very clearly preparatory for the U.S. program itself. It describes extensive genetic engineering program to develop new biological weapons, to increase the lethality of plague and tularemia, and to make them more resistant to antibiotics in temperature extremes, to introduce specially engineered plasmids to successive generations of tularemia cultures so the strain is resistant to all known antibiotics, to take a dried, powdery super plague, and I'm quoting from all this, 20 tons in stock and loaded onto various munitions, to use biological weapons as a range of tactical operations to be delivered using spray tanks, cluster bombs, and strategic operations, to deploy intercontinental ballistic missiles and strategic bombers carrying plague, anthrax, and smallpox, to solve the problems of fragile mobile microbes surviving in major atmospheric pressure changers, to be deployed as weapon systems, to weaponize microbes in a powder form, load them into various munitions, and integrate them into specific plans for the use of biological weapons. And then he acknowledges that what he calls Temple Fortune was the code name for the defecting biological figures who came to Britain and the United States and were immediately integrated into the Pentagon's own program for, quote, improved super plagues that would be converted into deadly antibiotic-resistant forms for weaponization. And it describes the process through which genes that cause plague virulence will be located on a plasmid and described as a binary biological weapon, where benign bacterial plague cells will be mixed with virulence-enhancing plasmids immediately before loading them onto weapons. This is a program which is without any attempts to disguise or dress up what in fact is involved here, and the reference to the development of such techniques in Russia is a cover for the fact that they are integrated within the program that he is describing and preparing for the generalized use by the United States. Tripling the potency of battle strains of anthrax, weaponizing glanders, supervising tests with the Marburg virus. I repeat, supervising tests with the Marburg virus. This is an open, in fact, a smoking gun acknowledgement that the so-called Marburg virus is not a biologically induced virus from nature, but in fact is a weaponized system, which is openly discussed here as just that. From anthrax to plague to Ebola to Marburg, and indeed a battle strain of smallpox, developing an even more virulent smallpox weapon and testing it. This is enhanced by the description of what are called hybrid chimera viruses, where to insert genes from one virus into another to create an even more lethal virus.
Ralph, if you're going to mention tularemia, we have to go to the Sunshine Project. which has exposed the tularemia release in Boston, and as well tularemia research that went on in Germany and is going on with the German army in its military research facilities. And this is with genetically engineered biological weapons agents. Now, tularemia is a disease in rabbits that also infects humans and has been used in the past as a biowarfare agent. And what the Sunshine Project discovered was that the German army was working with an antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And this came out on March 20th, 2003, in a report to the German Ministry of Defense that the German Ministry of Defense gave to the Parliament Committee on Defense Research Projects Involving Genetic Engineering. This is research that is financed by the German defense industry. Now, they had developed tularemia bacteria that they genetically engineered for resistance to both the antibiotics tetracycline and chloramphenicol. And this is important research and revelation by the Sunshine Project because it shows that this genetic engineering with biowarfare agents such as tularemia is going on throughout the world. The development also of a dengue vaccine was going on in Germany, too. I think we should go back to the report by Major Ainscough and look at the six specific broad groups that he discusses that had been developed by a group called the Jason Group that met in 1997, and they talked about the development and the use of biological agents in warfare, and specifically about the role of genetic engineering. The Jason Group is very interesting because these are not people within the depths of the Department of Defense or within DARPA, the research facility. The Jason Group is comprised of people in the highest levels of academia. It was established, Project Jason was established in 1959, and it was established by Marvin Goldberger, who later became the president of Caltech, Kenneth Watson, and Keith Bruckner. They were young physicists, and they offered their talents to the government, states the report. And the Defense Department financed their advisory panel. Herbert York, who co-founded DARPA, that's the research facility that brings us many of the computer programs that are used for population control, he said that it was launched, that Project Jason started after the launch of Sputnik. It was very important for the development of many of the laser research and other nuclear research that was done by the Department of Defense. York himself became the chancellor of the University of California at San Diego and was one of the senior advisors on Project Jason. Ralph?
Yes, well, I would like to mention two particular points with respect to this outline, Project Jason included. In this document on page 259, Ainscough makes the following extraordinary admission. He states that they had been studying work by the Russian scientists, which they had integrated, for developing a form of anthrax that would be resistant to all antibiotics. In early 2001, I'm quoting, the Pentagon made plans for genetically engineering its own modified strain of antibiotic-resistant anthrax. This is virtually a smoking gun for acknowledging that this is a military program of the United States in early 2001. And he goes on to say, a biological weapon consists of both the biological agent and its means of delivery. And he states producing these weapons requires the infrastructure and expertise, more sophisticated than a lab coat and a garage. And he states openly, this is not a mechanism opened to non-state terrorists, quote-unquote. In other words, the preparation and dissemination of efficient and effective biological weapons is a state apparatus operation, and that alone, quote unquote, from the document. They are disavowing the fiction of bioterrorism in the hands of supposed agents of non-state opponents of the ruling class, and acknowledging that these are state programs and cannot be operated on any other basis.
Ralph, there are six broad groups that were outlined by the Jason Group, and then there are two more that were outlined by another. The six are binary biological weapons, designer genes, gene therapy as a weapon, stealth viruses, host-swapping diseases, and designer diseases. And we will be specific about what we mean by each of these six categories. Binary biological weapons. What they mean is that they take innocuous parts and of the viruses, and they are mixed immediately prior to their use to form the pathogen. The pathogen is the disease-inducing element. This process often occurs frequently in nature. But what they do, for instance, with anthrax, plague, and dysentery, these and other diseases can be enhanced by the addition of what are called plasmids, which are parts that are DNA fragments that occur outside of the nucleus. And what occurs naturally in nature can be artificially conducted with basic biotechnology techniques in the laboratory. And the Soviets had shown that this could be done with anthrax, for instance, and they had two separate elements that were then combined in a bomb, and they were able to get these elements so that they were not destroyed with the high heat of the explosion. So just before the bioweapon was deployed, the two components would be mixed together. The transformation of the host organism, he writes, back into a pathogen can conceivably take place after a weapon is triggered and during the transport or flight. And as mentioned, the Soviets have mastered this technique, and so have the U.S. scientists now, particularly with the help of the Soviet scientists.
Well, Maya, let's be clear about this. They are attempting to father upon Soviet scientists and a putative Soviet program the authorship of this undertaking, when in fact, as clouds of secrecy, which we have cited so often, documents for at least 40 years, the Pentagon has been actually deploying such agents on civilian populations in the United States, from the release of bacilli in the subway systems of New York to the school systems of Minneapolis and St. Louis and to the Bay Area of San Francisco. And they have integrated all of the former Soviet scientists into their own program, and this is what he says in relation to binary biological weapons, that they are in fact a mechanism for taking virulent plasmids and transferring them amongst different kinds of bacteria and across species barriers to provide a binary biological weapon.
Yes, Ralph?
Whose plasmid can be independently isolated and produced in the required quantities. And indeed, under designer genes, which is a program for taking the human genome project and deploying it as a weapons blueprint, he describes the studying of the complete genome sequences for 599 viruses, 205 plasmids, 33 bacteria and fungi, and taking these genomes and manipulating them into bioweapons as essential blueprints to make, quote, microorganisms more harmful. This is not academic study. This is weapon programming to take as a biological war for pathogen any of these agents and to render them resistant to antibiotics and antiviral agents. Entire viruses are being created, analogous to the mutation of the influenza virus. New strains of influenza are created by induced hybridization of viral strains, swapping out variants or synthetic genes, altering a common virus like influenza to make it more deadly and easier to manipulate. It's an extraordinary documentation of the Armageddon that they have embraced as the central element of their campaign against the peoples of the world.
Ralph, we've discussed the manipulation of the avian flu virus that went on in Canada with scientists from the University of Wisconsin at Madison and from the Canadian National Laboratory for Health, and also with Japanese scientists, where they took the 1918 influenza virus and they recombined it so that it could even it wouldn't be so that it was resistant and more deadly than the 1918 virus. Mycoplasma, an organism that causes pneumonia in humans, has the smallest known bacterial genome, and consequently that is one that is become attractive template to build a bioweapon, he states. So gene therapy is another possibility as a weapon, and one that they are working with. Gene therapy is much in the news because of its possibilities to improve the health of people, and in particular the development of possibilities for remediation of diseases like diabetes. Genes have been spliced into bacteria to produce so-called human insulin in large quantities. But he notes that the same technology that has been used to progress in combating cystic fibrosis as well as diabetes is the same technology that can be used to insert pathogenic genes into people. So they would do this by changing the DNA. And they've already worked on this to alter the immunity of animals, and the next step is to alter the immunity of people. And some of this work has been going on, actually, in the as they've been trying to develop vaccines for HIV, which caused the AIDS. And they've discovered in the process that instead of improving immunity, that they have lowered the immunity. Ralph?
His account makes very clear what indeed is the nature of AIDS pandemic itself. Quote, one class of experimental vectors, weaponizing them, is the retroviruses, which permanently integrate themselves into human chromosomes. HIV is a retrovirus. It should not be it should not be hard to understand how gene therapy can be deployed for sinister capability. A viral vector is produced for a lethal strain of mouse pox virus, as you indicate, Maya. The genetically manipulated virus completely suppressed the self-mediated response, the arm of the immune system. Even mice previously vaccinated against the natural mouse pox virus died within days of exposure to the super virus. Who is doing this? This is a weaponization based upon vectors that recombine and deploy retroviruses to induce pandemic disease.
Ralph, H.G. Wells talked about in one of his stories the manipulation of animals to create synthetic animals, that is, a combination of animals. And as in this report, it discusses how researchers have used a virus to insert a jellyfish gene into a rhesus monkey egg, and they produced the first genetically altered primate. And this is also another apparatus that can be used for biological warfare that they are experimenting with. Most importantly of the six that I found was the stealth viruses. Now, the concept of a stealth virus is a cryptic viral infection that covertly enters the human cells, that is the genomes, determine who we are, and then remains dormant for an extended time. A signal, he notes, by an external stimulus could later trigger the virus to activate and cause disease. Now, there are some stealth viruses exist in nature. For instance, many humans carry herpes virus, which can activate to cause an oral or genital lesion. Similarly, the varicella virus will sometimes reactivate in the form of herpes zoster, that is shingles, in some people who've had chickenpox earlier in life. But the majority of viruses do not cause disease. This wouldn't be true with the biologically engineered stealth virus. Viruses that could be activated in a targeted population. And this is an important area that is discussed by Dr. Mae-Wan Ho, who is a well-known biochemist. Ralph?
The stealth virus feature is, quote, "It enters the human cell genome and remains dormant for an extended time and can be activated at will. The stealth virus will clandestinely affect the genomes of entire populations," he writes. And then he amplifies this with Category 5 of host-swapping diseases, animal viruses that are occurring in well-defined host ranges will be modified so that they can apply across the species spectrum. The manageable infectious agents are transformed into organisms with markedly increased virulence. In the laboratory of inspired, determined scientists, the animal virus will be genetically modified and developed specifically to infect human populations. Emerging diseases have serious implications for biological warfare, he writes, and Category 6, the designer disease, are actual spectrums of biological agents that are deployed so that they are designed specifically to produce toxins, BW toxins, bioregulated compounds or venoms, pathogens genetically manipulated to enhance their aerosol and environmental stability to defeat current identification, detection, and diagnostic capability. This is a witch's brew of biological warfare preparations that are ongoing, that are documented, that are spelled out. Project Jason is their application. An elite panel of academics involved across the university spectrum, as documented in the Chronicle of Higher Education on June 7, 2002, in Project Jason under DARPA to implement this Armageddon-like program of the United States government.
Ralph, Dr. Mae-Wan Ho described further the stealth bioweapons and how this also relates to the genetic modification of the food sources. In her article, Genetic Engineering and Bioweapons, she wrote, "Most AIDS vaccines are based on the HIV glycoprotein GP120. Results of laboratory and clinical research performed during the last 15 years strongly suggest that AIDS vaccines based on this antigen, that means creating antibodies, cannot be effective, and more importantly, it is not safe. Some virologists have been warning for years that GP120 not only undermines the immune system of individuals, but it's also likely to create deadly viruses and bacteria that can spread through entire populations. Recently, several of the GP120 vaccines have been withdrawn. The latest was a combination of canarypox virus that was engineered to carry HIV-1 proteins with a booster of the HIV protein GP120. But the National Institute of Health abandoned this vaccine because it found it to be ineffective. But the dangers still were not sufficiently acknowledged. And a company in Texas called Prodigene is now putting the GP120 into genetically modified maize, that is corn, as a cheap edible oral vaccine against HIV. Dr. Ho writes, "This will surely lead to widespread contamination of our food crops with disastrous consequences. And furthermore, the GP120 gene is known to possess recombination hotspots That is where there can be effective changes that will greatly expand the opportunities for horizontal gene transfer and recombination to create new pathogens, in the very same mechanism that goes on with the avian flu viruses. Ralph?
What she describes in this important document on genetic engineering and bioweapons is what Ainscough has in fact revealed. Stealth viruses could be introduced covertly into genomes of a given population, Dr. Ho writes, and triggered by a signal, design the diseases that produce cell death and biowarfare agents in agriculture. The human genome sequence, well on its way to completion, can be misused for large-scale databases containing information on specific populations, such as the human DNA biobank planned in Britain. She elaborates what she calls dangerous experiments that involve compromising the immune system of entire populations, and the biomedical community is being called upon to play its part in the generation of these Armageddon-like programs. Stealth bioweapons, she also goes into this in some detail, as she documents exactly what Ainscough has acknowledged is the program in advanced application by the U.S. military.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We'll return in a moment after the station identification.
Hi, this is Iggy Pop, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Creating the Next Pandemic, the new Dr. Strangelove's Biological Armageddon. Ralph?
Dr. Mayvanho concludes, as scientists stated in November 2001, the genetic modification experiments are worse than biological weapons. The biological weapons and warfare agents allow you to know their biological origin, but the genetic modification experiments obliterate that and conceal their genesis and thereby make it virtually impossible to counter. And she amplifies this in a document called The Genetic Engineering of Superviruses, which she prepared for the Institute for Science and Society on July 9th and 10th of 2001, in which she describes man-made synthetic viruses with the ability to multiply by the millions. And she describes the process through which this is being done, the hijacking of cells and metabolism to create viruses that are impossible to anticipate and virtually impossible to counter. She describes the work of geneticists who have succeeded in cloning coronaviruses and transmissible gastroenteritis viruses that infect newborns and give an 80% mortality. Numerous economically and medically important viruses responsible for many common colds and gastroenteritis and neurological illnesses, including multiple sclerosis, are being deployed, modified and deployed. The weaponization through genetic manipulation and genetic modification. And she describes in an issue of New Scientist the deadly virus that was created by researchers in Australia to engineer a contraceptive vaccine for mice when they spliced the gene for the protein interleukin 4 into what was a relatively harmless mouse pox virus and created a super virus in which all the mice died. The synthetic virus was so lethal that it killed half of all the mice that had been vaccinated against mouse pox. Genetic engineering has unleashed an uncontrollable, self-amplifying process of horizontal gene transfer and recombination that can sweep across the whole of the living world, with the potential of creating viruses and bacteria more virulent than nature's worst, she writes in this seminal article.
As we discussed in our last program of Creating the Next Pandemic, this is exactly what they are planning to do with the smallpox virus and what has been going on with the avian flu and the virus that created the Spanish influenza. Now, let us look at the record of germ warfare that has been conducted by the United States. And this is just a very brief overview. U.S. Use of bioweapons included the cholera-infected blankets that were distributed in the 1860s to American Native American tribes. And this is the cholera-infected blankets as opposed to the smallpox-infected blankets that were used much earlier, particularly by the British. In 1931, Dr. Cornelius Rhodes, something we've discussed often on Taking Aim, he conducted experiments under contract with the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Investigations in Puerto Rico, which were experiments on cancer and using cancer as a weapon. And also radiation experiments were conducted on thousands of U.S. citizens. Rhodes expressed the opinion that Puerto Rican dissidents could be eradicated, and that was his term, eradicated, with the judicious use of germ bombs. The important part of World War II, particularly, was the development, as Ralph mentioned at the end of the last show, of the anthrax bomb. The production by Great Britain, he mentioned, but also we found out this was a joint project with the United States for the manufacture of 5 million anthrax cattle cakes that were to be dropped on Germany in 1944 and was only stopped with the advent of the Normandy invasion and D-Day. And this was described, it's called Operation Vegetarian. It was described in the Herald in Glasgow on October 14th, 2001, an article that is available on the Internet, an article by George Rosie. And the aim of Operation Vegetarian was to wipe out German beef and dairy herds and then see the bacterium spread to the human population. With people having no access to antibiotics, this would have caused thousands, perhaps even millions, that is, a pandemic among German men, women, and children. And the anthrax cakes were tested on Greenard Island off of Westeros, and it was only in 1990 that the contamination, that is 46 years it took to remove the anthrax contamination from Greenard Island. Ralph?
Maya, the Allied Biowarfare Program was prepared from 1942 to 1945. In July 1942, Churchill placed the issue on the top level of priority for discussion and preparation. Now, what's interesting about this is, as the documents reveal, this biological warfare program had been prepared by both Britain and the United States since 1964. What's instructive about this is that the prime mover was a Whitehall bureaucrat named Sir Maurice Hankey. Who do you think he had been working with? None other than Shiro Ishii. Shiro Ishii is a particularly significant figure because it was Shiro Ishii who developed bioweapons that were used in Manchuria by the Japanese Imperial Armies on the Chinese. There are riots at this moment in Chinese cities responding to the fact that Shiro Ishii and the program of germ warfare that was carried out in Manchuria by the Japanese Imperial military has been downplayed and virtually denied in textbooks in Japan. Well, what's interesting in particular about this program about Shiro Ishii is that it is linked to the Allied Biowarfare Program, as the documents describe, since 1934. In the immediate aftermath of the Second World War, Shiro Ishii, the author of the germ warfare programs in Manchuria, was integrated within the work of the OSS and the Pentagon and made part of the United States and the Pentagon's own germ warfare preparations. What is being described in the Chinese press and across China as a ratification of the germ warfare of the Japanese Imperial authorities in Manchuria was in fact not only an Allied program since 1934, but the very author of the work of germ warfare in Manchuria, Shiro Ishii, was then integrated within the program of the United States military post 1945.
At Fort Detrick, Ralph, in Frederick, Maryland, and the site now of the U.S. AMRID. The manufacture of the anthrax cakes went on in Great Britain, but it also was going to be mass-produced in the United States in Vigo, Indiana, and the production was, there was a facility that was designed for the production of 500,000 anthrax bombs per month. The operation, again, was they were to be stockpiled in Great Britain, and they had calculated how, with the bombers, how many bombers it was going to take and how they would have to do the distribution in order to wipe out the German dairy and beef herds, as well as spread anthrax among the people of Germany. The last case I want to give for the use by the United States of germ warfare on a large extent was, of course, the dioxin, the herbicide that was dumped on 4.5 million acres of South Vietnam, Lagos, and Cambodia. This is Agent Orange, but aside from Agent Orange, as Ralph has documented meticulously, the use of also biological agents in the attempt to devastate Vietnam. Ralph?
I think that places in context the current epidemic of Marburg in Uige province in Angola, and in Congo, and in Sudan, and in Zimbabwe, but particularly in Angola. The health experts' teams of the WHO that are active now with respect to the deadly virus that has spread in the north of Angola are describing a virulent disease that creates bleeding from every pore and every spectrum of fluid, whether spittle or sweat or blood or feces, carries the virus in so virulent a form that anyone in contact with it is immediately infected. The World Health Organization has been active in Angola and nominally on a humanitarian mission, but in fact monitoring the impact and the spread and the precise social dynamics of this terrible Marburg virus, which, as we have described, is a manufactured virus akin to Ebola and acknowledged in the Ainscough document as having a laboratory and military origin. And that, I think, is instructive as well, because Marburg has its antecedent in what was called a mystery virus. The New Scientist described on June 20th of 2001 the development of a mystery killer as lethal as Ebola that broke out in India in February and March. There had never been any presence of Ebola-like viruses that broke out in the Siliguri and the Himalayan foothills and killed 70% of the people infected. This is the New Scientist describing as lethal as Ebola. No one can understand from whence it came. The victims had coma and fever, went into fits and started dying. In the beginning, they all died. Since the death stopped, Dr. Haldar has been working with other investigators trying to find the cause of this mystery disease and presenting their findings at the World Congress of Neurology in London. And so far, the report in the New Scientist states they know very little. They have not found any virus which has been equivalent to this. It could be a new virus with a mortality rate of 70% that puts it on a level with Ebola and Marburg, said Professor Thiruvai Hemachudra, a neurologist from Chulalongkorn University in Bangkok. It is highly contagious. It is totally unfamiliar to us. The identity of the virus is only part of the mystery. We know little about how it behaves. We have tried to track it, but we cannot find the vector or the mode of transmission. We have no idea about the origin, he writes in The New Scientist, with the headline, Mystery Killer. And here we have Indian scientists warn of mutant measles virus. Again, the Indian epidemic of mutant measles virus is described in the British Medical Journal on March 24, 2001, as a emergence of a highly lethal measles-like virus and causing encephalitis in adults and children, the third outbreak of a highly fatal illness involving the brain and kidneys, which is being attributed to a measles-like virus, an unexplained outbreak which has had no antecedent and is unlike anything they have seen before. They have ruled out vector-borne infections, the article continues. Is it not clear what we're addressing here? And here, again, on another reference to mystery viruses, inadequate research facilities fail to tackle mystery disease, writes Sanjay Kumar in New Delhi in the British Medical Journal on January 4th, 2003. A mystery disease in India's most populous state, Uttar Pradesh, that has affected 112 children and resulted in 43 deaths, continues to baffle medical researchers. They are unable to say after 3 months whether the disease is caused by viral encephalitis. The identity of this unknown virus remains elusive. The article is very much analogous to the previous two that I have just cited, and that indeed indicates what we are addressing here with the Marburg-like virus in Angola.
Ralph, what's interesting in both instances, both in the Siliguri case in West Bengal and in the later epidemic that arose in India, is that they sent samples to the Center for Disease Control in the United States. And with the first, the Siliguri, where you, in one case you described as a measles-like disease, except that there was no rash and the children had been inoculated against measles with the measles vaccine. The CDC called it a Nipah virus. And this is a virus that was discovered only in 1999, named after Nipah in Malaysia. And it's called a zoonotic virus. That is, it's found in fruit bats. They're the natural hosts of the Nipah virus. But it only exists in Eastern Asia and Southeast Asia of Australia, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines, and some of the Pacific Islands. It doesn't exist in India. And also, Nipah virus is not easily transmitted to human beings. Yet when the Indians sent samples, the CDC came back and said this is Nipah virus. The Indians do not think in any way, shape, or form that this is Nipah virus. The reason I mention this is also that when the doctors in Wege province of Angola had sent samples to the CDC at the very beginning of what they considered might be an outbreak of Marburg or Ebola, the CDC came back with negative results. And as a consequence, it was many, many months later, and the actual pediatrician who had first sounded the alarm was dead by then, that the World Health Organization recognized that this was in effect Marburg virus. So we have here two instances of the CDC giving what I consider to be false information and which people on the ground in these countries consider as false information.
Who do you think is monitoring the appearance of these mystery viruses in Africa? None other than the U.S. Army Medical Research Unit based in Kenya. The Department of Defense Global Emerging Infection Surveillance and Response System, it is called. And they are the ones who are doing nothing about it, but monitoring its impact, describing its spread, creating a chart and a map of how it works, and feeding this information right back to Fort Detrick and to the Pentagon. The National Academies Press, in a document, particularly pages 99 to 120, are very clear about what is being done here. They are monitoring the impact of experimental viruses that are devastating populations now in Africa and Angola, prior in Kenya and in Congo and in Zimbabwe. Who do you think is carrying this out, brothers and sisters?
And meanwhile, here in the United States, in South Carolina, the Department of Health, the South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control, has been conducting simulations in prior Taking Aim shows of creating the next pandemic. We discussed the role of simulating smallpox and plague and the vast computer apparatus, or TOPOFF, the program that went on in New York and New Jersey recently, and Connecticut, simulating a biological attack. Well, here in Florence, South Carolina, simulation was the occurrence of a flu-like symptom at a fictitious Swamp Fox State University, and the involved McLeod Regional Medical Center in the Carolinas hospital system. And people came in with a few fever and sore throat cases. By the second day, the fevers worsened. There was stomach pain, diarrhea, and the emergency room staff and some of the EMS workers were then beginning to show the symptoms, and eventually some of them died. And the result was that by day 7 in the simulation, an international terrorist organization told the media that it was responsible for unleashing a strain of hemorrhagic fever. An unlikely scenario, we must say.
Maya, this is a report from the Florence, South Carolina Morning News of April 23rd, 2005, this past Saturday. A drill focused on what is called the PD Ebola epidemic. They are brainstorming to address, quote, the unthinkable, an attack that is that has afflicted the PD, which is the area around Florence in South Carolina, with the deadly Ebola-like virus. A sudden occurrence of flu-like symptoms at the state university, severe stomach pain and diarrhea, with similar symptoms to those of Ebola, described as a preparatory exercise for the occurrence of the Angola-like, Ebola-like epidemic in the United States, in Florence, South Carolina. Africa, India, and now South Carolina. The document that we started this show with is finding its application in a very clear and concrete and horrific and specific fashion.
Over the course of this 6-week series, Creating the Next Pandemic, we have discussed the man-made origins of Marburg and Ebola in the laboratories of Litton Bionetics, and how the specific experimentation with monkeys and other animals of inducing cancer and HIV and other viruses that created what became Marburg and Ebola. And we've also discussed the how with genetic engineering there can be the spread of pandemics, that is the creation of the transformation of naturally occurring viruses limited to poultry and other birds, the avian flu viruses, and how they are changed in order to create viruses that can spread so fast and without resistance that can create actually another pandemic similar to the Spanish, what's called the Spanish flu, the influenza of 1918 and 1919. In fact, the H2 virus, that is the 1957 Asian flu virus, was distributed to 4,000 laboratories internationally, most of them here in the United States, and this was only discovered by a laboratory in Canada, which then reported it to the Center for Disease Control, which is trying to cover its cover itself and collect some of the samples back.
Well, my, actually, what they're doing here is called the oops excuse. Oops, we sent it to almost 5,000 laboratories. Oops, they remain in the hands of military laboratories, but we've collected them from everywhere else. Says Bush and his cohorts, oh, it is shocking that the 1957 flu virus should be distributed to laboratories at the very moment when the United States military and the AMRID program is generating this very genetic manipulation of viruses on a crash basis, when every document that we have cited manifests the fact that this is central to the perspective, both military and global, of U.S. Capital, of U.S. imperialism itself. It is indeed the creation of the next pandemic. It is the targeting of the peoples of the world. It is the Dr. Strangelove's of the biological weapons era, the Armageddon that they are preparing for us because they are the enemies of the peoples of the world. It is the criminalization of the system. It is the integration of all the horrors that we have associated with Nazism, with Japanese imperialism, with the fiendish targeting of populations for destruction through experiment, through biological agents. Everything that has been summoned up as the epitome of evil is now integrated within the normal functionings of the state. Creating the next pandemic is the fingerprint of a criminal system. And brothers and sisters, we must document it. We must resist all the implications of this terrible program, because there is no more clear message to us that we are pitted against a system that is incapable of addressing our needs and in its death throes is menacing the peoples of the world as never before.
You've been listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We conclude now our series, Creating the Next Pandemic. You will find all six parts on our website, www.takingaim.info. We also would like to thank some people who have supplied us with information during the course of this series: Kelia Ramirez, Bruce Tanner, Kathleen Roberts, Mark Bilk, and Tom Durst. Thanks to all of you, and thanks to our listeners for your tremendous response to this six-part series. You can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net or takingaim@wbai.org. We'll be with you next week.